Retro Review Podcast here on the Barber's Chair Network. My name is Chris Novak, joined, of course, by my co-hosts Chris Osborne and Rob O'Neill. As you know, each month, we're a little late on this, but each month we go back in time and watch two, sometimes three old pay-per-views from the past or episodes of wrestling television that are significant. And the month of June was no difference to this, so we hope that, you know, during your 4th of July weekend, assuming that you are listening to this, that this provides you some entertainment while you're out there being safe, having some good food, which we plan to do, of course. And this time around, we are going to go over in historic World Wrestling Federation pay-per-view for one particular reason that should be pretty obvious because it's been in the discussion for the last 2 weeks.
Yes.
And also, a TNA pay-per-view from the year 2005, which is sort of cross-blending into what we're doing with this aggression, but that's okay because it's an eventful show, to say the very least.
Yeah, yeah.
That being Slammiversary 2005, the World Wrestling Federation pay-per-view that we're going over is the 1996 King of the Ring.
Yes. And yeah, I mean, it's exciting. There are a couple decent enough shows, and there's a lot of stuff to talk about. Chris, how you doing?
Oh, not bad. Love being back on and doing these every month, so looking forward to it. 96, the King of the Ring, I think was like my first pay-per-view show, first actual event that I went to. So it was really great to watch that show back again.
Oh, nice. So yeah, I mean, we have some news. It's just the TNA stuff's going to be, you know, all TNA stuff because we do the WWE stuff on the other show.
Exactly.
So.
And there's not, I mean,
Not a ton going on right now, really.
Yeah, and for, I mean, well, for 1996, it was kind
of... Well, 1996, we have a decent amount of stuff just because of Hall and Nash.
Exactly.
But
that happened around the same time.
But we are going to start with Slammiversary. And starting with the Torch on June 4th, 2005, TNA's 52-week television deal with Fox Sports Net expired with the May 27 edition of Impact, knocking TNA off of TV until Slammiversary. So,
yes, this is the webcast era.
Yeah.
Their shows. I actually vividly remember this time with TNA because I started getting swept into it a couple months prior at Final Resolution. I believe I was, you know, caught up in the fact that, oh, Jeff Hardy's here, and so is DDP, and who are these other people? Oh, look, Jeff Jarrett.
Yeah.
I'd actually never heard of TNA, so a lot of the wrestlers who kind of disappeared after WCW and, you know, the new emerging talents that were coming through there for the first 2 or 3 years of its existence, I had no idea where they all went. I legitimately had no idea what TNA was, and I think that I probably saw it one afternoon on Fox Sports Net, which would have been FSN New York. Probably just one afternoon when I was home from school on Friday, I bet.
Yeah.
Kind of ending my weekend. I'm like, oh, okay, this is interesting. I didn't know wrestling was on a Friday afternoon.
Yeah. So, you know, they're done with Fox Sports Net. They're working with the WGN Superstation on a deal at the moment. They'd like to be on Monday nights. Live for 2 hours, starting 1 hour before Raw, and then having 1 hour of crossover, which not a good idea. I mean,
no.
Negotiations may have derailed on that, though, because WGN is concerned over TNA's ownership situation.
That's not surprising. Also, as we've gone over before, because I think we talked about some ruthless aggression pod, asking WGN to give up a Monday time slot.
Well,
and there's like and so many things that happen on that network because they're still playing a lot of the sports teams that are on there. It's kind of a conflict.
Yeah, that's the thing, because you're losing out on not only Chicago, but, you know, the Cubs are still on the Superstation at that point. So
yeah,
you're going to get a lot of angry people if you skip over, you know, Monday Night Cubs game for what would be perceived as, you know, the minor leagues of wrestling by most people.
And also, to be fair, like, as we know, Mondays are like one of the biggest nights of television in general.
Mm-hmm.
Asking for a Monday night time slot is a pretty tough ask.
Yeah.
Yeah.
WGN was more interested in preceding Raw, where TNA officials are pushing to have 1 hour crossover period, like I said. But TNA also may be able to negotiate a deal with Spike TV starting in October because WWE is going back to USA Network. Ultimately, that's what TNA will end up doing.
What's interesting, actually, is they pretty much locked that in way before that, though.
Yeah.
Obviously, their first night on Spike is October 1st.
Yeah. It's also, I mean, it's not ideal to not be on TV for a full summer.
It's definitely not. But I think that this is just 13-year-old me. I was like getting really immersed in it, and I was legitimately following the product on ImpactWrestling.com or TNAImpact.com, whatever the hell it was back then.
Yeah.
And I was watching their shows each week. Like I'm the real player.
Yeah.
That's what you can do, like win in for real player, whatever the hell.
So June 11th, TNA creative team got together for a booking meeting to plan the third anniversary pay-per-view on June 19th. The more optimistic wrestlers are encouraged by the new booking committee setup. Dusty Rhodes is out. Scott D'Amore and Mike Tenay are in. Pessimists are concerned that Jeff Jarrett still has veto power and will inevitably end up back with the belt, which will unanimously be seen as a death knell for TNA's ability to grow and be different than WWE. You know what's interesting is when you listen to Jarrett tell it, you know, on his show, all this stuff makes a lot of sense.
Well, of course.
I think it's
when Jarrett can frame everything the way he wants it to, it makes a lot of sense for it.
He's just really good at that whole thing where, you know, I can get behind him. He's kind of like Paul Heyman, you know?
Yes.
Where you get behind him because he's believable when he talks, even if the things he's saying aren't true.
Yeah, and I mean, it does make sense, too, in the sense that you know that Jeff Jarrett's going to be around. Like, these contracts, I don't know what the contract situation is in 2005, but especially in the early days of TNA, where they're working on, like, you know, just show up for these dates. Like, he is the one guy that you know is going to show up. He has skin in the game. He's definitely going to be around. So there's no worry about Jeff Jarrett showing up.
Yeah, because a lot of the other guys, you know, Daniels, Styles, they signed Joe. He came from Ring of Honor. Styles and Daniels were still doing ROH appearances for a while.
Yeah.
So you could always kind of have that threat loop.
Yeah. Well, I mean, also, you know, Jarrett doesn't work Slammiversary because he wasn't going to win the title, which we'll get into in a little bit. So, you know, it's an interesting time. June 18th, WGN announced that negotiations with TNA had broken off and they're not going to do it. But again, it looks like it's going to be Spike TV, which it will be. So, you know,
that worked out for the best for them. I mean, Spike, they were with Spike for how many years? 9 years? 8 years?
Yeah, I mean, it ultimately didn't work because they tried to go to Monday nights, but
ultimately didn't work because they didn't go to Monday. They went to Monday nights, and also they brought back Russo despite them saying don't bring him back.
Well, yeah,
but it ultimately works too because I mean, a longevity. I mean, they don't survive. They're not going to survive on the internet for that long. And also with Spike TV picked up the Sting contract, so you got that, and then I mean, even though it eventually probably was the downfall, I mean, they did pretty much pick up Bischoff and Hogan, too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, yeah, you know, Jeff Jarrett didn't wrestle the main event of Slammiversary, which we'll get into in a little bit. He tried to pitch himself as, you know, winning the King of the Mountain, but Dixie wouldn't budge. And so they did an angle where he got arrested. And, you know, I thought he was going to end up coming back, but he just never comes back. So... You know, they replace him. Well, we'll get into with who they replace him with in a little bit here. During Slammiversary, Mike Tenay announced that Impact will be found exclusively on TNAWrestling.com until it finds its way back onto television. And then the first week they did that, the servers didn't work. So.
TNA, everybody.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, now we can get into Slammiversary. June 19th, 2005, from Orlando, Florida, the Impact Zone. We open with kind of a weird intro. I mean,
they always did these types of intros. I like
them. It's like kids in a field with like the Harry Potter music behind them, but also, you know, actual wrestlers being like, you know, it's a new era and the days of the old guys are over. I mean, it's a good concept, I guess. You know, it kind of goes away when you realize who wins the title at the end, but, you know, show is called Slammiversary because it's the anniversary of the promotion. We got Mike Tenay and Don West on the call. Jeff Jarrett was arrested on the pre-show for attacking a fan, and Mike Tenay and Don West bring up the Malice at the Palace and the Gary Sheffield thing.
Yeah, and the fan of the Red Sox game.
Yes. And Jeff Jarrett will be replaced with Raven in the King of the Mountain match.
Raven, who of course was quarreling with Director of Authority Larry Zbysko for some time going into this. So it was a it was made out to be this big thing that Zbysko chose Raven of all people.
Yeah.
Just a primer there for anyone who may or may not be privy to that. He Raven was not originally supposed to be in this spot. The fact that he was even a shock to people, you know, in canon.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Big fan of the Impact Zone. They weren't running it when I was at Universal, which is a bummer. I would have went. It would have been fun. It was 2007, yeah. I think. Yeah, that would have been okay. We get our first match. Delirious versus Darrell Clark versus Amazing Red versus Shark Boy versus Elix Skipper versus Zach Gowen.
Yes. There are some guys in this match.
Yeah. Kind of forgot Zach Gowen was there.
Mm-hmm. He was.
Yeah, this is how they find him, isn't it?
No, because he's already in WWE. He's done with them by now.
I think this is his second run, though. Because isn't the story that TNA had two one-legged men and Laurinaitis hired the wrong one?
Oh, yeah. Yes, that is correct. Don West points out that Shark Boy is big time and all over the news because he filed a lawsuit against the Shark Boy and Lava Girl people over use of his name. So, you know, I guess however you can get it.
PR is good PR.
So you got two guys in the ring at once and everyone has to tag in, but it's one fall to the finish, unlike the match we watched on SmackDown this week, which was elimination. Mm-hmm. Darrell Clark, who I didn't really know who Darrell Clark was before this, but did a springboard moonsault to the floor. Amazing Red did a corkscrew from the top rope to the floor. We got a Tower of Doom, which wasn't something you were seeing every week in WWE at that point. So that was fun.
We weren't even seeing it in TNA. That's
no.
Where it started.
Yeah.
Kind of percolated on the Indies too, but you know.
Yeah, you know, a lot of unique pin breakups. I like that. And Sharkboy gets the win with the Dead Sea Drop. So, I mean, fun opener.
I don't have a problem with that because Sharkboy's obviously a crowd and cult favorite there. So,
yeah.
Starting off the show, you give him a win. Why not?
Yeah. I mean, I don't mind it. It's just, how was everybody able to make legal pins at the end? There's only two legal people. I don't even know if Sharkboy was legal and if the person he pinned was legal. But somehow they end up going through everybody's finish and pinfall attempts when there's only two legal men.
Yeah, so. I mean, I guess that's why you want those to be elimination, but the flip side is if it's elimination, it's like a 30-minute match, so...
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, Or just make it a tornado match.
Yeah. Shane Douglas is interviewing the Shocker, because I forgot Shane Douglas was their backstage interviewer for a time. Alex Shelley comes up, says that he can do Lucha style, Strong style, American style, MMA, whatever. He can counter anything Shocker does to him, and then we go into that match.
This is a very spring chicken Alex Shelley.
He's 22. They say on commentary he's 22.
This is pre-camera gimmick for him, too.
Yeah.
So. Yeah. Yeah.
Mike Tenay says the Shocker was in a famous McDonald's commercial. So I looked it up. And in this commercial, you get a luchador, and he's in McDonald's with a hamburger, but he can't eat it because he's got his mask on. So he pulls off the mask, and it's the Shocker. And then he takes a bite of the hamburger and pulls off that mask, and it's the original mask again. I don't remember it, but it was entertaining. So. Yeah, Shocker wins with the small package after 10 minutes, so he gets the best of Alex Shelley. It was good, too. I mean, you know.
Yeah, it was okay. I don't know if we're doling out goods a little too generously.
That's true.
I don't know what those overalls were and his dancing on the way to the ring. It was really weird.
Yeah. Shane Douglas interviewing Three Live Crew. Conan wants to know if BG is with them or against them because he's been teasing that he's going to form back up with the Outlaw Billy Gunn. Mm-hmm. Speaking of Conan, he was on AEW last week, and it was very good.
It was.
He's still good.
Yes. Huh.
Good for him.
Yeah. So we move into Ron Killings against the Outlaw Billy Gunn.
Who calls himself Kip, who I think either now or later calls himself Kip James.
Yes.
His shirt's a pretty interesting concept.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure he's the one where when he debuted, they yelled repeatedly that it was Billy Gunn and then realized they couldn't call him Billy Gunn.
Yes.
Yeah, it was. That's why they went with the Outlaw.
Yeah.
We have no other name for him but the Outlaw.
Yes. Ron Killings gets a win out of nowhere with a roll-up, and then Billy clotheslines him afterwards and gets a chair. But BG James comes out and wrestles it away from him. The crowd chants for the New Age Outlaws. Billy turns his back and kind of dares BG James to hit him, but he won't. And Conan comes out and takes the chair, and Billy leaves the ring. So still some tension between the three live crew here.
You know, I guess it's the easy thing to do, and I suppose it makes sense since he just got there and then had BG, but it's like, this says a lot to me, at least among wrestling fans, how popular the New Age Outlaws were still at this time. Because you had people chanting for them.
They're popular when they come back in 2014.
I know, I'm just saying, especially, you know, all things considered.
I would watch Billy Gunn wrestle right now. And I maybe have watched Billy Gunn wrestle this week. Who knows? Who's to say?
This match was not good to me. For me, we have a low blow like 45 to a minute in, right in front of the ref. No DQ, whatever. Okay. The second straight match where we get a roll up victory, and then the Outlaw's shoulder is like way up anyways.
Yeah.
Like this whole thing is just a cluster. But I will say, the Outlaws are definitely over. They were definitely, the crowd wanted them together. And it was okay.
Also, does TNA have any other refs except the guy that's in NXT now? Rudy Charles. Because
they have Rudy Charles. They had, I don't remember when they brought in Slick Johnson.
Slick Johnson's there on the first show. I think Scott Armstrong was there for a minute.
Yeah, and then Hebner's are there later.
Yeah.
Hebner's are later. Yeah, Rudy does a lot of the officiating.
Now he does a lot of the officiating for NXT.
I did not even know he was in NXT now.
Yeah, man.
I learn something new every day. That's a good thing. I shouldn't know the referees.
Well, that's true.
Despite what some people like to think.
That is true.
Hey, get them all action figures, too. Come on now.
Exactly. Oh, man. So we move on to the Naturals against Team Canada for the NWA tag titles. Dom West is not a fan of Scott D'Amore, and I also do not care for Scott D'Amore.
I don't know what's up with these people wanting to compare everybody to Hitler.
Yeah.
But probably not something you should do.
No, that's not ideal.
No, it's not. It's really not. I hated Scott D'Amore as a kid, but I didn't think
it was Hitler. Yeah. You know, the only, Team Canada I remember is when Eric Young is with them. So this is...
This is coming... He's coming up.
Yeah.
He's coming up soon. Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is P, A1, and Rude.
I must have watched him on Spike, too, then, because I remember watching Samoa Joe, and I mean, I remember watching Fox Sports Net, but I remember specifically watching Samoa Joe as well, and, you know, Eric Young with Team Canada, and yeah, so...
You obviously had to
watch him. They did really good, you know, face versus heel tag stuff here. Mm-hmm. All you can ask for, you know. You end up with a hot tag. Eventually, Petey Williams goes for a Canadian Destroyer, which wasn't a move you saw 10 times a week at that time.
It wasn't a two count either.
Yeah. But then Jimmy Hart comes out, tosses Andy Douglas a megaphone, and he hits Petey with it, and they get the win. Jimmy Hart is the Naturals' spiritual advisor and mentor now.
That was cool.
Yeah.
That was cool.
I like it. Camera does a terrible job picking up Jimmy Hart coming down, though. It's who the hell was that?
Yeah.
All right.
This also feels like the only time in his life in wrestling that Jimmy Hart's getting a paycheck separate from Hogan. Since Hogan's back on Raw now.
Yeah.
Probably. Yeah.
Yeah. I wonder if that's because he wanted to be WWE. They said no, so you went there.
I don't know.
Into that, because I do remember him being the Naturals for quite some time.
Yeah,
I wonder if he helped out with music. I mean, I don't know how much.
He probably did, because TNA's music is not bad.
Yeah,
it's pretty decent, all things considered. To be honest, some of their themes are pretty iconic.
Also, I mean, I know it's not like a stretch to just have Team Canada be, you know, O Canada on electric guitars, but that's what Booker T's music was in WCW too for a time, and you know, so maybe that was Jimmy Hart's influence. Sean Waltman is with Shane Douglas, and you know, it's good that Sean Waltman is okay and still, you know, doing well in 2021, because he's not looking great here.
No.
And I mean, he's good in the match, but this interview, he's just clearly, you know, not himself. So we move on to Samoa Joe against Sanjay Dutt. Sanjay Dutt kind of charges at Joe to start it, and Joe just kind of slams him down, and just from there, just kind of a long squash. But
yeah, pretty much.
I think they got 6 or 7 minutes, and Joe wins with the muscle buster, or he hits the muscle buster and then wins with the Kohina clutch. So that's how you get Joe over.
Yeah. This is obviously, looking back, I think that this is probably the most important match or moment of the show.
Yeah.
Considering that this is the beginning of Samoa Joe's run in TNA. And I think I've discussed this before. I know we talked about it the other day or other week on the podcast when you said that Kurt Angle was the best wrestler on the planet in 2005 to this point. I don't necessarily disagree with that. What I will say, though, is that from here on out through all the way into December 31st, I think Joe is the best wrestler on the planet.
That's fair.
He's about to take off like a bottle rocket.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and part of that is, you know, Angle works the program with Eugene.
Oh, yeah.
And then
the
Cena
stuff doesn't really
yeah.
hit too well. And the Michaels Iron Man match is fine. But
yeah.
I think it is unfortunate that Angle's positioning kind of dropped him out of the rankings there. I still would obviously, no doubt, put him in top three, top five.
He also had to jump back to SmackDown and kind of save the show.
Also six.
Well, yeah.
But I see what your point is. Yeah, Joe, this was fun, obviously, looking back on it, just him being the crap out of Sanjay Dutt.
Yeah.
And like I said, from here on out, they kind of screw the pooch later with Joe, but for the first 6 months here, they just do an impeccable job with
him. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, and Joe's interesting because, you know, he had discussions with WWE here, but you know, if he goes to WWE, he's not going to keep working Ring of Honor, and he's not going to keep working. I think he's doing some New Japan stuff at this time. So this is kind of the best place
and
for him.
As well.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah, he's in the dojo for New Japan, for the LA dojo. And then, but yeah, I mean, if he goes with WWE, he's stuck in OVW for who knows how long.
Which, I mean, don't get me wrong, OVW could use him at this time because they're about to lose, you know, Lashley and I don't remember who they have, you know, until Punk kind of takes over, and they probably would have went right into Joe and Punk.
Punk kind of transitions right into
it. Yeah.
Because it's after the summer of Punk that he goes there.
Oh, yeah.
So even after they lose those guys, they get Punk.
Yeah.
Yeah, but then OVW has that weird one, because this is right when, I know, like, they send Heyman down there to OVW, and, like, Cornette's big thing goes out there. So, yeah, OVW is not a great place to be in. Coming up too.
God, is Cornette about to get fired? Is that July as well?
It's gotta be soon.
I know that he does eventually come to TNA.
Oh my god. So much going on in July.
It's a hell of a month.
Yeah. Alright, so yeah, we get Bobby Roode against Lance Hoyt. Match that could still happen in 2021. I mean, they're in different companies, but you know. My problem with this is it kind of felt like a TV match.
Yeah.
You know, Scott DeBoer keeps interfering. Probably should have been ejected at some point, but is what it is, I guess. Lance Hoyt goes for the boot. Scott DeBoer distracts him again, and Bobby Roode hits a lariat to the back of the head to get the win.
Yeah.
And incredibly enough, these two are still kicking today.
Yeah.
Completely different things.
Yeah. I thought the finish was weak. I don't know if that was Roode's finisher at the time, but that seemed really weak to be the finish.
Yeah.
And then after the match, DeMore hits the goes for the moonsault, and he actually like gets a pretty good moonsault in. But like, why do you have a guy like him doing a moonsault? You're just making it seem so easy. Like, you're just telling us like, oh, any guy can do a moonsault, and then you're gonna have Hoyt do the moonsault afterwards.
Yeah.
Like, just let the guy fly for a splash, like do something unathletic.
Yeah.
Why do you have your manager, who you're playing up as a putz, do something athletic?
Yeah, I don't know, man. It's confusing. It's like having, you know, your women's champion get their submission no-sold by Vicky Guerrero. Just a mess.
Imagine if that happened. Why? Yeah.
Well, you know what the thing is about that is she did that to AJ too, when she wrestled AJ, because Vicky shouldn't be wrestling.
Well, yeah. Why do you put Vicky Guerrero in a ring? I mean, you shouldn't have done it in 2014 or 2015 or whenever, and then you definitely shouldn't be doing it in 2021.
Yeah. So we move on to America's Most Wanted against Three Live Crew. We get a video package that neither team has been able to really get along lately. So that should be an interesting dynamic here.
And this is pretty much the same video package with like 10 seconds of America's Most Wanted in it.
Yeah.
I noticed too.
So BG comes out and does the New Age Outlaws intro for himself and Conan. The outlaw comes out and starts fighting with Conan, so BG's left on his own, falls victim to the numbers game, and Conan comes back and apologizes, but BG just leaves. So some more tension between the Three Live Crew here.
Indeed.
I'm pretty sure the video package was longer than the match.
Yeah,
and I think it was.
And the camera work is so shit when the outlaw comes back out. So bad.
We move on to Christopher Daniels against Chris Sabin against Michael Shane for the X Division Championship. And as they'll tell you, the X Division always delivers, even though it's kind of dumb because there's no criteria to be in it. But
Well, they kind of imply that it's for the smaller wrestlers.
Yeah.
Yeah, but then Joe's going to win the title and soon.
It's not about weight limits, it's about no limits.
It just feels like you could call it something that isn't division and it could be like, it's the mid-card.
Exactly. If you got rid of the word division and figured out a different word, it would have been a lot better. It would have taken everybody's confusion out of it. It would have saved everybody a lot of talking points.
Yeah. So this is elimination rules. Chris Sabin comes to a point where he has to either rescue Trinity from Christopher Daniels or eliminate Michael Shane. He chooses to eliminate Michael Shane, and then Christopher Daniels hits a fallen angel on Trinity.
Angels win.
And then Daniels ends up beating Sabin to retain the title.
So, I always like that finisher, by the way.
Yeah, it's good.
Yeah, two things. So the video package, this match, you would not have known that Christopher Daniels had needed to be in this at all. Like, this is all Michael Shane and Chris Sabin for the whole video package.
Yeah.
And then who is the babyface? Because you have Michael Shane, who definitely isn't the babyface on any part of this. Then you've got Sabin, who doesn't save the girl, even though, yes, it's a business relationship, but you still don't save her. And then you have Daniels taking out the girl, who you don't need to do that either. So it's like, why do I want to root for any of these guys?
Yeah. That's a very good point.
Yeah.
This is why I say this must be Russo, because, like, there is no point to any of this.
Oh, man. All right. So the main event. We get Raven against Monty Brown, against AJ Styles, against Sean Waltman, against Abyss, King of the Mountain, for the NWA World Heavyweight Championship. So, falls count anywhere. If you're pinned, you have to go to the penalty box for 2 minutes. You can't hang the belt, because that's how you win. You hang the belt. It's like a reverse ladder match. But you can't hang it until you score a pinfall or submission. And first person to hang the belt wins.
Too many rules.
Yes.
You know... Yes, but they actually do an okay job with it. Yeah. So, I mean, you know, I think Ultimate X is probably more fun because there's less rules, but, you know. So AJ brings a ladder to the ring with him. Very smart. Monty Brown starts the match by pouncing Raven and pinning him, which ruled.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, man, there's a guy that should have been champion in both companies.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. Oh, man.
He should be champion right now. Go send him to NXT or AEW. He could be a champion.
Why not? Raven got out of the box 10 seconds early, but Jeremy Borash does the countdown anyway. And they're like, oh, the graphic must be wrong. No, Raven just left early. Monty Brown hits a powerbomb on Sean Waltman, pins him, so Sean Waltman's in the penalty box now. Monty pounces AJ, and Raven pulls AJ out of the ring and pins him, so Raven can hang the belt now. AJ and Waltman are in the penalty box at the same time. Abyss hits Monty Brown with a black hole slam. Monty goes to the box now, and Abyss can hang the belt. AJ does a spiral tap through a table on Abyss and pins him.
Nuts.
Yeah. So Abyss goes to the box, and I think everyone can hang the belt now. Sean Waltman does an X Factor on AJ off the top of the ladder.
Which was, God damn.
My God. So we come down to Raven and Abyss being on top of the ladder, and Raven kicks him off and hangs the belt, and Raven is your NWA champion now.
So we end the night with a champion who wasn't in the match to begin with.
Yeah, you know.
Smells like Uso.
Just saying.
I don't even... Is he even there at this time, though?
I have no idea. It's just... That's why it's like, man, who is thinking of these things? Because he said it's Dusty's off the committee now, too.
Yeah.
So, like, who is giving these brilliant ideas? Is, like, Terry Taylor still there or something?
Apparently, yeah. He left in, like, 2004.
Oh, well. You know.
Can't even blame him. No, but I really need Jeff Jarrett to explain how... Who thought of this match, like all these rules, but it somehow works. To me, it's like the penalty box part is probably the best part of it because it allows the guy to just be out for 2 minutes. So I don't have to like be like, why are they selling so much on the outside? He can just go sit in the penalty box for 2 minutes and then come back.
Yeah.
A couple of things I love. AJ Styles' theme is like the best theme in TNA. This is, yes. That theme was amazing.
Yeah, it's very good.
But also I love the announcers before the match say that the graphics were made earlier in the week. but yet the one graphic that has Raven, like they have a graphic with Raven's height and weight and like the tail of the tape is still changed. So it's like you could change that, but you couldn't put a picture of Raven in there. Yeah. Match. So yeah, I love the production errors.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, you know, everyone likes to talk about how TNA was never good, but this was entertaining, you know.
Yeah,
got the job done. This is probably the 1 or 2 year stretch when it is actually pretty good.
I would agree. Yeah. I think the main event title scene was what it was. It was kind of annoying that Jarrett was around it for a while. I think them trying new things over the next couple of months with who they have as champion was actually a good thing. Notably, you know, they had Styles for a month. They have Raven for now a few months. I believe he drops it to Rhino. And I know Rhino comes, I believe Rhino comes out of Bound for Glory as the champion.
Yes.
And I think he loses it at Turning Point 05, if I recall correctly.
Let's see. Rhino loses it 2 days later after Bound for Glory back to Jarrett, and then Christian beats Jarrett at Against All Odds, and then Jarrett wins it back at Slamiversary next year, and then Sting.
Won it. And then who won it from Sting?
Abyss.
I have no recollection of that. When did that happen?
Genesis. 2006.
So the next month.
Yes. Because he beat Sting by disqualification, because titles change hands and disqualifications in TNA.
Oh. The only thing I really remember from Genesis 06 was Joe Angle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have no recollection of Abyss and Sting wrestling for that title.
Yep, and then Christian beat him, and then their partnership with the NWA dissolved. Yeah. So Christian was the last NWA TNA champion.
I know they did some bullshit at Slamiversary 07, I believe it was.
Yeah.
I forgot what it was about. Yeah.
And now the NWA title does not exist anymore. Nor does the NWA. Not exist.
Yeah, definitely not a thing.
You might as well.
Oh, man. Yeah, so we can move back to 1996. Lots going on. So from the Observer, May 6th, there's a 17-day tour of Europe, and apparently Diesel and Razor weren't really following the rules. And guess who paid for it? Triple H. It's going to be a theme here. Chris Candido was being harassed and ribbed, which is unfortunate, but also Chris Candido didn't really seem like the type that stood up for himself in the face of things that were going on in his life. But, you know. So, yeah, Sonny got sent home early from the tour. You can draw your own conclusions there as well. Let's see. So we move to May 13th. Eric Bischoff said that Johnny B. Badd is lying, that he was only making 150 per match, and Eric Bischoff can prove it. The problem with Johnny is that he's lazy and spoiled. He didn't want to leave home. He didn't want to do the things that the rest of the talent like Sting, Luger, Hogan, and Savage do, and that's promote the business. So Eric Bischoff, not a big Mark Merrow fan.
No. I have a feeling like Mark Merrow, I doubt that he was, I don't know, maybe it's just because the way he is now, because he's like a motivational speaker, but I feel like he'd be like all for doing appearances and whatnot, especially in that character.
Yeah, well, and that's, you know, Bischoff says that too. He's like, oh, he spent a lot of time talking in churches and schools, but that doesn't really help the business. Which,
okay,
this is true, but, you know.
I mean, yeah, but I mean, send them to schools and get some young kids to watch the product or something.
Yeah, it can help the business if you let it.
I mean, maybe it's not the perfect thing that you want him to go out and do, but that's another avenue that you probably should use him to do that for.
Yeah. Dwayne Johnson, the son of Rocky Johnson and Peter Maivia, were signed to a developmental deal. It pays him $300 a week, so he's going to be working in USWA. So,
wow.
Good luck to him.
So he doesn't have $7 in his pocket.
Okay, May 27th. The final appearances of Diesel and Razor Ramon in the WWF came in a strange curtain call finale of The Click before the first non-indoor pay-per-view house in history to top $300,000 at Madison Square Garden.
That's nuts.
Yeah. The fans weren't particularly thrilled that they were leaving. And then, you know, they come out after the main event and they all hug in the ring. And, you know, you got to punish someone for it. Two guys are leaving and one guy's your champion. So
drew the short end of that straw there.
Yeah. And then we have reports that Jim Helwig is easier to get along with this time in the past, but he did arrive 2 hours late for an autograph session the day of the MSG show. Oh, man. Yeah, so Scott Hall appeared on Nitro, and Vince is not pleased because he's kind of doing Razor Ramon stuff at the moment, and you can't do that. So there's going to be some lawsuits here. Shawn Michaels apologized to a few wrestlers for not having his priorities straight in regards to the deal at Madison Square Garden. I find it hard to believe that Shawn Michaels apologized for something in 1996.
Yeah, I was going to say, I more believe that Triple H did that, the apology tour. I don't know about Shawn doing any apologies, especially as champion. I don't know.
Yeah. Let's see, we got lots of Brian Pillman stuff in here. Just go watch The Dark Side of the Ring. It covers it very well. Ron Simmons is coming to the WWF, which was a guy they were trying to get for a long time.
Oh, and, yeah.
I don't know. His run is interesting because, you know, they don't ever really push him as a singles guy like he could have been. But, I mean, he was always a good guy there, you know. Yeah. So, it appears that the British Bulldog is leaving. Put in his 90-day notice, and he is going to go to WCW.
Doesn't really end up happening.
Yeah.
It does after the screw job happens, but not now.
Yeah, and, well, he goes, and then it doesn't go great for him because he, you know, falls on the trapdoor.
Oh, yeah.
Messes it back up.
That's right, yeah.
And then he comes back to WWF and wrestles in jeans.
Yeah.
I
forgot about the trapdoor thing.
Yeah.
What's the more unfortunate back injury? That or what happened to Rick Rude?
Rick Rude.
Yeah, probably Rick Rude.
It's gotta be Rick Rude.
Yeah.
That was right, like, it was in the thick of, like, his prime,
mm-hmm.
I would say.
Yes.
Yeah, he was, like, he was primed to be, like, the top guy. Mm-hmm. Like, he was going to be top guy in WCW at that time.
Yeah. Also, Jim Neidhart's coming back in. Dave didn't know if it was a favor to Stu or, you know, because of his work, it was a favor to Stu. I mean,
it's always a favor to Stu.
You don't bring Jim Neidhart in for any other reason.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, because Stu was mad at them because, you know, they have Diana involved in the Michaels and Bulldog thing and, you know, looking like she wants to get with Sean. And yeah.
I will say that's like one of my favorite Jim Cornette stories. Is,
oh,
that
my God, yes.
Bulldog gives him the phone, and then he's talking to Stu, but he thinks it's Owen doing a Stu impression, and then Owen walks in, and he realizes, oh, shit, I actually am talking to Stu, and
yeah.
Tells him, because he keeps telling him it's Bruce Pritchard that's the one who's doing it.
Yeah.
Oh.
Shawn Michaels was on Man Cow building up the card, and when the subject of Flair and Hogan were brought up, Michael said that his idol one time was Flair, but he also said some people don't know when it's time to quit. Which is funny.
Hilarious.
which is funny because he, you know, retires Flair. And then we thought Michaels knew when to quit for a long time. And then he came back and it was
Saudi,
not good.
Saudi money pays better. Okay.
Oh, man.
Sorry if we didn't lose our main job.
Well, you know. So King of the Ring 1998, June 23rd, or 1996, yes, June 23rd, 1996, from the Mecca in Milwaukee, probably one of the last events there.
No, they did Over the Edge. We just covered that one.
Yes, they did. That's true. So is the Mecca the one where the UW Milwaukee plays? Is that still
standing? Yes. It's where UW Milwaukee plays, and the Admirals, which are like our minor league hockey team.
So it's like
AHL or something.
The one across, well, it used to be across. I haven't been there since Fiserv was built, but it was like across from the Bradley Center, pretty much, right?
Correct. Yeah. It's like right down the street or something, like real close. Yeah.
So we get the World Wrestling Federation for over 50 years of revolutionary sports and force entertainment. The intro goes right into Warrior, which isn't how I would start the show, but because he's facing Jerry Lawler tonight. There's other stuff going on as well, but started with Warrior and kind of took me out of the intro. We get Vince, JR, and Owen Hart on commentary.
Yeah.
So that's fun.
It is.
And we open with our first King of the Ring semifinal, Mark Marrow against Stone Cold Steve Austin. Austin beat Bob Holly and Savio Vega to get here. He was a stunner for the first time against Savio. Mark Marrow beat Skip and Owen Hart to get here. Owen's not happy about it on commentary.
Makes that very clear.
Also not a fan of Sable.
Can't blame him there.
Match goes on. I put Stone Cold was bleeding from the mouth, but as it turned out, his lip just kind of got like split in half pretty much. It's not great. He hits a stunner for the win, but he wasn't doing the kick in the stomach yet, so it looks weird.
It looks weird, and then too, like, Marrow's selling it like his throat's like, you know, being decapitated, so it's not like he got knocked out or anything.
I mean, you know, it was kind of a long opener, but I liked it. I like these two guys. So, kind of is what it is.
Yeah.
Chris, you were at this show, right?
I was. I was up opposite hard cam, like the last row in the actual place. I was a big, like, babyface fan. So, like, all the babyfaces, I just remember being so mad that Austin beat Marrow at this point.
Jake Roberts with Doc Hendricks says that through the Lord, all things are possible, including beating Vader tonight. So we go to that match, Vader against Jake Roberts in our second King of the Ring semifinal. You think about it, it is pretty wild that Jake and Warrior and King Kong Bundy are all there at this time. I think Bundy's there in 1996. I guess it's kind of similar to how they do things now, but people last longer now too, so it makes sense. But it's strange. A lot of talk about how Jake is 41 and he's very old. Vader is also 41. They do not mention that. Jake goes for the DDT, but Vader drives him into the corner. Then he goes for the DDT again, and Jake hits it, but Vader shoves the ref on the way down. He gets disqualified. And then Jake gets beat up after the match. So, you know. Move on to the Smoking Guns against the Godwins for the WWF tag title. I mean, there was an interview that was very bad with the Smoking Guns, and they should not let them talk.
Yeah, Billy Gunn never should be able to talk ever. That's probably why he got Road Dog for so long, and I hope he doesn't talk now on AEW. I don't know what his deal is over there, but unless he's saying like five words, he probably shouldn't be talking.
So the Godwins come to the ring with a couple goats, you know.
Sure.
Smoking Guns have hats, but they're not large enough. They need bigger hats. I did find someone online with the foam hat, but I think Billy signed it, so I don't think he's going to sell it.
It's
a bummer. It's the first one I've ever seen in the wild like that. Billy Gunn, not a very good singles wrestler, but good tag guy. And if you believe the story, it's because of his asthma.
Yeah, I heard that. Yeah, Makes sense. He does seem like he'd be like really winded in most of these matches by himself.
Mm-hmm. Smoking Guns get the win after Bart hits Phineas with his boot. Not a good match.
No, not a good match.
Doc Hendricks is with Camp Cornette. Jim Cornette says Michael's in trouble tonight against Bulldog. Mr. Perfect, who's tonight's referee, is in the locker room getting dressed in there. So that doesn't seem great for Sean.
It does not seem great for him at all.
And then we move on to Jerry Lawler against Warrior. The lead up to this featured Warrior wearing a baseball hat to the ring because he didn't want to get hit in the head with a glass painting. That was fun.
That's great. That's great.
Jerry Lawler calls the Brewers a bunch of losers. Correct.
Well, they were going into this game 35-37. Technically true. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah. What'd they win the other night, 15-7?
You know, not relevant.
They were in the AL.
They were.
Oh, wow.
They were also in talks, I think, about moving. Because they were always in talks about moving until they got a new stadium.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So Lawler kind of roasts the crowd for a little bit. Then Warrior comes out. Vince calls him the most reckless individual in the history of the World Wrestling Federation. Which,
what?
I think he meant it as a compliment, but you know.
It's certainly be construed in a bunch of different ways.
I mean, they only got a few minutes. Warrior wins with a shoulder block because Jerry Lawler is smart and isn't going to take the press slam. And yeah, I mean, this is Warrior's last pay per view, so
yeah,
you know,
makes the ending eventually that we'll get to sort of odd.
Yeah. Doc Hendricks with Gorilla Monsoon. Jake Roberts isn't telling the doctor how hurt he was, and the doctor doesn't have x-ray glasses. And Jake is 41 years old. I mean, it feels like there's other ways that doctors can figure these things out without x-ray glasses, but, you know, medical science has come a long way.
Yeah.
Then we move on to Mankind against Undertaker. And it's good. These two have never really had a bad match. Undertaker's trying to get his mask off, and Vince wants to know what he looks like, so he probably looks horrifying. for the most part, you can see what he looks like. I mean,
yeah.
Undertaker hits Mankind with a chair while Mike Chioda's distracted, and then he also hit him with a chair again later, and it looked like the ref saw it but didn't do anything about it, which was strange. Mankind smashes Undertaker's head off the steps, and yeah, I think it is cool to get Mankind to come in and just work with Undertaker right away and be like, this guy is on Undertaker's level in terms of, you know, he's also
deranged and unpredictable.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
That was good. It was a really good way to bring him in. So Paul Bearer accidentally hits Undertaker with the urn. Mankind puts him in the mandible claw for the win.
Accidentally.
Yes.
Yeah, I love that finish. That was great.
Yeah.
Expertly done. With what's to come. But I love that. I love the Mankind Taker feud. And this also, to me, I think is probably Taker's first real feud where he speeds up his offense. He's not the plodding dead man sit up. I'm going to take, you know, 20 years to do it. It's a lot quicker pace for Taker to go into. I think that really happened during this feud.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because I was trying to find a story from Kevin Nash earlier. So I was watching a couple of his shoots and he's like, you know, Scott was working Undertaker and Undertaker is still no-selling everything. So he's punching him. Then he finally just gets him in a hold and, you know, there's no more no-selling everything.
Yeah, exactly.
So we move on to Ahmed Johnson against Goldust. And this match is 15 minutes long.
And very rooted in problematic.
Goldust gave Ahmed CPR a couple weeks ago, and 15 minutes. Ahmed gets the win with the Pearl River Plunge and gets the Intercontinental title, so that's nice, I guess. Yeah. You know,
looking past literally everything else here.
You know, Ahmed's a guy that had some real bad luck with injuries, and probably would have been decent. You know,
agree.
I mean, he's definitely red hot, especially at this time, and. I mean, I don't know if he would have ever got to the main title. Probably not, but he definitely could have been pushing it and would have gotten some main event paydays throughout the years, if not for injuries.
Yeah. Brian Pillman's here for an interview with Jim Ross. And immediately you notice that he's walking on his foot probably more than he should be doing since he got hurt like 3 weeks ago. So probably not great. Pillman says he gets why Jeffrey Dahmer tried to consume the whole state from head to toe. Can't say that. Calls JR stupid son of a bitch and says he's going to rape, pillage, and plunder the entire World Wrestling Federation.
Yeah, he really lingered on that word rape, though, too. It was really weird. I was like, where is he going with that word? And then,
not great.
But I actually have no recollection of Pillman being on the show when I watched it. I was like, oh, Pillman's here, too. Totally blanked on that from my time being there. But I love the stare down with Austin coming down to the ring for the next match. That was great.
Yeah, well, and that's something that they would do periodically back then. Like, you'd have Sable and Austin just kind of stare each other down on the ramp or whatever. It's cool. It's cool to do that, even if you're not going to end up doing anything with it. Like, obviously, in this case, it's cool for the people who are like, oh, I remember seeing those guys, you know.
Exactly.
But, yeah, move on to Austin against Jake Roberts, the King of the Ring final. Jake Roberts, I don't know if you know this, is 41 years old.
He's 50 or 60 according to Owen.
Stone Cold beats Jake up for a while, but Jake doesn't give up even though he's 41 years old. Gorilla Monsoon comes out to check on him because he is 41 years old, and then Austin hits a stunner to beat Jake, and Stone Cold is your 1996 King of the Ring. It was supposed to be Hunter Hearst Helmsley, but as noted earlier, he was punished for hugging his friends.
Yeah, he was. And then after
what a difference though that would have been. Like, that's the most craziest what if. Like, everything goes to plan.
Yeah, because I mean, it's like, what happens with Austin then? Because obviously, you know, DiBiase's gone, so he's separate from him at this point. So he's doing the stunner. You know, he does, that's the bottom line, because Stone Cold said so in this interview. So that's clearly something they're Austin, trying to work in.
And Austin 316 doesn't happen if he's not facing Jake.
Yeah. I mean, and that's
assuming that pretty much the rest of the bracket is the same, that Helmsley beats Mero and then he beats Jake in the finals, pretty similar to this.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't have Jake doing all, you don't have Austin doing Austin 316 because Jake is thumping his Bible. So.
Yeah. So, yeah, Austin goes and talks to Doc Hendricks after. The first thing I want to be done is to get that piece of crap out of my ring. Don't just get him out of the ring. Get him out of the WWF, because I've proved without a shadow of a doubt you ain't got what it takes anymore. You sit there and you thump your Bible and you say your prayers and didn't get you anywhere. Talk about your Psalms. Talk about John 3:16. Austin 3:16 said, I just whipped your ass. All he's got to do is go buy him a cheap bottle of Thunderbird and try to dig back some of that courage he had in his prime. King of the Ring, I'm serving notice to every one of the WWF superstars. I don't give a damn what they are. They're all on the list, and that's Stone Cold's list. I'm fixing to start running through all of them.
And that's the bottom line, the Stone Cold sets
up. Yeah, I mean,
so you get two great catchphrases.
Yeah, it's crazy.
It is. Literally is.
Because, I don't know, you know, obviously he goes to ECW and, you know, becomes a better talker, and, you know, that whole thing's been told. But yeah, it's interesting to think what would happen without this opportunity. Because does he still probably get to the top? I mean,
I would say yes.
Eventually, yeah.
You know? I would definitely say yes, he would.
Because,
yeah, it's interesting. I'm looking at like the next pay per views. Like, I think he's got Mero next, but then he's in a dark match at SummerSlam. So, like, he's not even prominently used going for, you know, at least for a few more months. I don't think until you get all what the Bret Hart match.
The Bret Hart feud is what reignites him.
Well, and that's another what if, because Bret's contract is up in 1996, and exactly. A lot of people thought that he was going to join Hall and Nash. So, you know, if he does that, then yeah. So it's a couple kind of big things that just really worked out. Yeah, go to the main event, Shawn Michaels against the British Bulldog for the WWF title. Your special referee is Mr. Perfect, but then Gorilla Monsoon comes out and says that Mr. Perfect will be an outside official and Earl Hebner will be the ref in the ring.
Sorry to hear that.
Yeah, that's unfortunate.
Yeah, I thought too much Monsoon. Like, we don't need him in back-to-back matches.
No. I don't know. Like, this match is good, but it's, I don't have many takeaways from it.
You know what? I came into the match because I stupidly looked at the match times, and I was like, I got to watch a 25-minute Bulldog and Shawn match. And I actually thought it was semi-decent. I was like, okay. This, I mean, it's too long, that's for sure.
Yeah.
But it's okay. It's fine. It's not terrible. It didn't make me want to turn it off after, you know, 10 minutes. They definitely had some points in the match where they were not on the same page.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's one point where Shawn Irish whips Bulldog, and the Bulldog just stops, like, right in front of Shawn, and Shawn's like, move, like, pick me up, do something. Yeah. And it was good. I liked it. I thought that it was weird, the camera panning to Diana.
Yeah.
Because she's not the most she doesn't give the best responses or facial expressions in the world to be showing her the whole time. I also thought it was weird, though, to do sort of like a bait and switch sort of with Perfect not being the actual referee.
Yeah.
Because I liked that. I thought that, you know, Perfect had the Mania 10 match where he was the ref for the Luger one, and he called that weird DQ on Luger, and you had the Mania 9 stuff like 3 years ago. I mean, I'm sure nobody remembered that in the office, but even at like 6 or 7, I was able to remember all that stuff. So I thought that would have been cool stuff, but they didn't really prop anything up with that.
Yeah. So Michaels retains. Then Owen Hart finally gets involved after Vince telling him all night that, you know, he's not to be involved in these things. So he attacks Michaels. But Ahmed Johnson comes out for the save. And Vader comes out. And Warrior comes out to even the odds. And at International Incident, it's going to be Bulldog, Owen, and Vader against Ahmed, Shawn, and Warrior. Except it's not going to, because Warrior's not going to be there. He is like Magic Johnson in that he's not going to be there. He gets fired because he chooses to not show up to work anymore for a couple weeks, and you can't do that.
Nope, you can't.
So that was King of the Ring 1996, which, you know,
it's a pretty decent show.
It's well, it's remembered for what it's remembered for a reason.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. I love Warrior coming out with his jacket back on, though. Like, I'll play his music. I got my jacket still. You can go do that.
Oh, man. Yeah, no. These were okay shows, though. I mean, it's not like when we did the two Slamborees a couple months ago and they were both bad. I mean,
this was...
Like, there was enough entertaining stuff in the, you know, 5 hours or whatever that these shows took out that, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't think we've picked for July yet.
We've not, but, you know, we can certainly go into the archives here.
Yeah.
There's certainly some, there's some Fully Loadeds that we could watch. Maybe some Bash at the Beaches.
I have never seen Bash at the Beach 1996.
Oh, I mean.
Uh-oh.
So.
Really?
Historical significance, I suppose we could delve into that.
Yeah.
That's the, you know what? That's the crazy. I don't even know why I didn't put two and two together. So, like, within 2 weeks, you have Austin 316 and you have the Hogan turn.
Yeah. So, I mean, with the benefit of hindsight, it's very easy to see why, you know, 1997 ends up being just like an all time great year.
Yeah.
And it's
about the freaking boom.
Yeah. Because this is right when Nitro goes to 2 hours as well, and obviously Raw will do it later in the year, but so it's fun. It's good stuff.
It is? Okay, so that does it for this edition of the Retro Review Podcast here on the Barber's Chair Network. You can always check out all our podcasts on SoundCloud, iTunes, and Spotify. You know, you can see what's happening over there with episodes of the 4040 Club, as well as Sitting with the Guys. Additionally, you know, as always, you know, you'll probably have an episode of Ball Don't Lie coming out soon, since the finals are about to be most likely set soon enough. Chris, sorry to hear about Giannis and whatnot.
Yeah, I'm heartbroken right now. It's terrible.
At least I think the solace you can take is that there was no structural damage.
Yeah, but the solace I have to take now is that we had a perfect opportunity to win a championship, and now we have to go through Brooklyn for the next the next year too again. So
true. Good point.
So yeah, and of course, you know, sign up for the Patreon, patreon.com/barbershairnetwork. $5 or $10 gets you everything, including the WWE Top 25 podcast, which will be dropping for our half year mark. See who's going to be at the top of the list. We'll record that probably most likely next week because we're not recording on 4th of July weekend. So everyone, once again, be safe, cook and enjoy good food, and enjoy yourselves, and oh god, don't injure yourselves with fireworks.
don't be like the LAPD and get those fireworks off.
And you know, if you're in an area where there's like an extreme drought going on, don't.
Yeah.
Don't be that person. And that is all.